Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is former New York Jets defensive lineman Mike DeVito, and you're listening to Play Like a Jet.
From Joe Namath's Super Bowl guarantee.
I got news for you, buddy. We're going to win the game, I guarantee it.
To Ryan Fitzpatrick's contract holdout.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, he has not shown up at camp. Where are we with Fitz versus the Jets?
And everything in between.
They froze. It appeared that Marino was going to try and stop the clock. Instead, he connected for the fourth time with Mark Ingram.
And it is juggled and caught by Jumbo Elliott.
This is Play Like a Jet, your weekly look back at some of the best.
The New York Jets are the world champions. They have upset the Baltimore Colts. And beat him handily here today.
And worse.
Vince Wilfork is going to throw Brandon Moore back into his quarterback. He's going to fumble the football. Mark Sanchez not expecting it. And it was the backside of Brandon Moore that knocked the ball out.
Moments in New York Jets history. So get ready to hop in your DeLorean and take a trip back in time.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Kind of a DeLorean?
For an in-depth look at the most memorable games, seasons, players, and events in the history of gangrene. It's time to play like a Jet.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
With your hosts, Scott Mason and Big John Sparopoulos.
Welcome to Play Like a Jet, your weekly look back at the biggest moments in New York Jets history. My name is Scott Mason, alongside my tag team partner, 6 foot two, 265 pounds, and he is going to invade the main event at WrestleMania and take the WWE Championship. He doesn't need a money in the bank. That's how big and bad he is, Mr. Big John Sparopoulos. What's going on, John?
Scotty, the best intro in the business. Appreciate it. Scotty, doing okay. Not a big fan of the month of February, but we are inching our way closer to the NFL draft combine and free agency.
Yeah, they always say February is the worst month of the year if you're a sports fan and if you live in a cold weather climate, because not only is it generally pretty freezing, but there's very little going on sports-wise. Even the NBA comes to a slowdown because you have the All-Star break and all of that. So it's the worst time of the year, especially if you're a sports fan. March Madness is around the corner, though. We've got free agency and the draft coming up. Baseball, spring training is on the way. So a lot on the horizon, and all we have to do is make it through another few weeks. I think we can do it, right, John?
Scotty, I'm going to try my best to inch forward into March.
Hey, we forgot another thing that comes up around then. That's WrestleMania, of course. So this year, it's at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. You coming home for that, big guy?
Scotty, don't think I can squeeze that into my schedule. I'll be watching it on the network at my house.
For only, you guessed it, $9.99. That'll be a fun show, WrestleMania, here in Jersey. I don't live super far away, so I'm considering heading over there. even though I did go to WrestleMania a couple of years ago when they were in town, when it was The Rock versus Cena, the rematch, and it was really cold. So you got to be wary of that when you do an outdoor event in April in New York. You never know what the weather is going to be like. And so I'm still kind of on the fence about it, especially considering the cost. But John, you want to talk about something that's expensive? We could talk about Antonio Brown's contract at the moment, although it looks like he's about to get traded. Mr. Big Chest, what is he, stealing your gimmick?
Scotty, he must have heard me say at the gym that I never miss chest day.
It's true. I know firsthand because I've been to the gym with you on chest day, and I've seen it up close. Don't mess with John on chest day. There's a reason why he's Big John and not medium-sized John.
That's right, Scotty, and I also never miss a meal.
So you're kind of a cross between Antonio Brown and Ryback, I guess.
That's a great analogy. I think we need to make that a t-shirt.
I like it. We should make that a t-shirt along with the Play Like a Jet shirt that you could get right now at theloyalist.com/turnonthejets. And we may have to work on a line of Legends Series t-shirts, including our friend, Mr. Wesley Walker, number 85. He's been our guest the last 3 weeks to talk about his life and career as a New York Jet, 13 years in gangrene. And boy, did he have some explosive revelations last week about racial tensions in the locker room. It was really sad to hear, but I'm glad that he was willing to open up to us and tell us about it. I can't even imagine what he's probably got in store for us this week. I can't see how he's going to top last week. What do you think, John? You ready to go find out by talking to Wesley Walker for part four of this series?
Geez, Scotty, I'd love to, but it's funny that you mentioned March Madness. I have a little project I'm working on.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Well, Scotty, don't know if you saw this week the big college basketball game, North Carolina and Duke. Top prospect Zion, he busted through his Nike shoes. So, Scotty, I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. Was the shoe tampered with? Was it a bad prototype? So, Nike's sending me out 20 pairs of shoes to test myself.
John, why are they going to you for that? Do you have some sort of experience testing shoes?
Well, Scotty, they know I'm a tremendous athlete that scored 2 points on my varsity basketball team, was a blocking tight end, etc., etc. So they wanted somebody with my ranking to test these shoes.
You're like Skip Bayless, minus the crazy opinions and the multi-million-dollar contract.
Especially without the money, yes, Scotty, that's correct.
All right, John, you go do what you're going to do for Nike. I hope that you can help fix this situation so that no other college basketball player has to go through what Zion Williamson just did ever again. I'll go talk to Wesley Walker. You test the shoes, and we'll meet back here. How's that?
Scotty, sounds like a plan. Talk to you soon.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Wesley, after the first 3 weeks of the 1981 season, the team really started to kick things into high gear. And you had two excellent games, both against the Dolphins and the Oilers. You had two touchdowns in each of those two games. And in those games is when the sack exchange really started to take hold. Now, 81 was a year where Abdul Salam, Joe Klecko, Mark Gastineau and Marty Lyons all were huge, but it was Klecko and Gastineau who really were on fire that year. And in fact, this is before sacks were an official stat, but those two guys combined for something like 45 sacks. And every week, it almost became like a competition to see which guy was going to have more sacks. They'd have 3 sacks apiece. They'd be killing quarterbacks every single week. What was it like for you to watch this special unit on defense, and you have these two guys in Klecko and Gastineau that are among two of the most dominant defensive players that there's ever been in the league in their prime, and they're just every week making quarterbacks basically cry to their mama. So what was it watching this happen?
Well, there's nobody better if you look at it from an all-around sense than Joe Klecko, and I always say he's my MVP. I mean, He played multiple positions, but he was strong. He had this whole cock thing he would do, and he could dictate. It would be, if I had to relate it to what I would do to people, he could line up, and he's dictating what he wanted to do to you, and you didn't even know how to block him. Mark Gasnier certainly was got big, strong, fast, and he's another dimension. But I know there was, on that whole sack exchange, there was a problem, egos and jealousy. And now that I look back on things, and I see personalities, and I can see how Mark can be and how he can be disruptive where you have a problem with him. But vice versa, some of those guys, they had their egos also. And when you look at Joe Glecko and Marty Lyons, you know, those guys had their own thing and a control over people. And when you didn't gravitate to do what they wanted you to do, then there was a rift on the team. So Gasino was just doing his own thing, and that didn't set well with those guys. But as a unit, when you took Marty and Abdul, certainly, and I hope Abdul gets in the Ring of Honor. And Abdul also had a stroke, and I feel for him. He hasn't been in town, and they get together as a sack of chains, and they do these autograph appearances. But a lot of people don't give Abdul credit, who was tying up a lot of those guys to make it easier for Gasino and Gasco to do their thing. But certainly Mark and Joe were two of the best guys I ever seen defensive-wise, and they all brought something to the table. I mean, there's nobody that could match Mark Gasino's size and speed. I mean, that guy ran a 4.6 and being 280 and strong, and there was nobody stronger than Joe Glecko, because this guy could there's no way anybody could take him one-on-one, and you talked to probably the best offensive line, I think Andy Munoz would tell you that. But it was just great to watch all of them do their thing. But certainly Mark Gasino and Joe Glecko, especially Joe Glecko, they were in a class by themselves.
I mentioned the fact that Mark Gasino and Joe Klecko made guys cry to their mama. I was being literal, because there was an offensive lineman on the Colts later on in that season that got dominated so badly by Gasino that he actually did cry. But before we get to that point, we had a whole bunch of wins in a row for the Jets. They became the hottest team in the league after that 0-3 start. And Richard Todd had played terribly in 1980, but he really heated up in 1981 and played a lot better. And we're going to get to his signature moment in just a second. But before we do, you talked about how even Anthony Munoz would say that nobody could block Joe Klecko, and Joe Klecko was as dominant a player as you've ever seen. There is a huge debate right now, and a lot of Jet fans are really pushing for it, about Joe Klecko in the Hall of Fame. I've maintained, as somebody who's, I guess, a bit of a Jets historian from doing this show, that Joe Klecko 100% belongs in the Hall of Fame. You played with him for pretty much your entire career. What are your thoughts? Joe Klecko, Hall of Famer, yes or no?
Absolutely. You know, we had so many talented athletes, and it's a shame that whether it's not going to a Super Bowl, not getting or not winning, which also puts you over the top, being playoffs multiple times, and we certainly had our share of being in the playoffs. But, you know, it's hard to determine who should be in the Hall of Fame. I always want to know how they make that determination, who makes these decisions or whatever. But if you look at a guy like Joe Glecko, and certain players on our team, that what they actually brought to the table and what their abilities are, to really look into it, there's no question that he should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know the criteria or what it really takes, but people who are making these decisions, they don't even know, and if you go by team, and I'm sure there's a lot of guys on every team that you can pick out, and you look at what they really brought to the table and how they affected their team or what they really did. And I always used to say, if you want to know who the best is of the best, then you line them up together and you go against them, and you'll find out there. And that's what supposedly the Pro Bowl is all about. But I know for a fact that a lot of guys would get in the Pro Bowl out of politics. They wouldn't vote for certain players. Bruce Harper led the league one year, and they gave it to Rick Upchurch only because he'd been there multiple times or whatever. But if you went by stats, Bruce Harper should have been in there because he led the league, you know, and that's what happened. But not a lot of people know exactly what really goes into it. And then I guess they'll look at the personality, look at your history maybe, where you had a little storied history that didn't do so well, and guys get in trouble or whatever it is. But as far as Joe Glacco goes, I don't know what the real reasoning. I look at Harry Carson, who should have been in there a long time ago. It took him that long. But I don't know who has the say-so or why it takes as long as it does or what the criteria is. I wish I knew what it was, but the only thing we can do is as a team and as fans is to try to call it out, and hopefully it'll get there, you know. I'm sure if you spoke to Joe, you know, he would love that to happen, but he's not going to say, you know, it won't matter one way or another. You know, he's an athlete. He knows what he brought to the table. He knows he's just as good as anybody that's ever been put in there. And there's nobody, like, I don't care who the receiver is, I'm not going to think I'm not just as good as anybody else, or do I really belong there, you know? I know a lot of guys that are in there that they couldn't even wear my jockstrap, but that's just the way it is, you know? But I won't say that, but that's just the way it is, you know? I mean, I played against James Lawson, used to just burn him up in track and stuff, and there was a lot of jealousy, and I remember being in our first Pro Bowl, and he was, you know, NFC, and I'm in the AFC, and with Tony Hill, and I thought they were really rude and not real friendly. There was a lot of jealousy when it comes to that. But he stayed relatively healthy and with good teams and putting up the numbers and was able to do that. But that's what happens. Guys are on winning teams. They have all the accolades. But you cannot tell me Joe Glacco does not belong in the Hall of Fame, you know. But it's only a title. That's the way I look at things, you know. Just as good as anybody in there.
And the amazing thing about it, as your former teammate JoJo Townsell pointed out when he joined me to talk 1986, was Joe Klecko did all of this, and he was pretty much never healthy. The guy was battling injuries his entire career, right?
Absolutely. You don't. But the sad part of it, you just don't know who's battling injuries, and they have to keep. And now it's even worse, where the coaches keep everything here. They're not allowed to say what's going on. And when you start to dip, or certain things are not happening the way it's supposed to be happening, you keep a lot of that covered up, and you have to, and you can't disclose these things. And you know, athlete's going to tell you, well, I've been hurt with this, that, and other thing. And it's sad, you know. But that's just part of the game also. But that can affect you, you know. And he was a stud, you know. And what I don't like, too, though, I remember there was a lot of jealousy with a lot of players. And I remember Marty saying something about Mark Gastineau. And, you know, there was rumors of like steroids, but, you know, back then everybody was doing steroids back then to be able to compete. So I don't know if that had the issue to deal with it. But, you know, there was a lot of things that were going on that behind the scenes you just didn't know, you know, and a lot of things were going on. I used to hate when players try to single out another player, and I'm like, you're with the biggest steroid user on our team, and you're jamming somebody else up, you know what I mean? But they had to do it in order to compete, and that was a whole other issue in itself, you know?
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Since you just brought up the fact that all these guys are doing steroids, I don't want you to point the finger at teammates because I don't want you to be that guy or anything like that, but did you ever use steroids?
No, and I'll tell you the truth on it. We had a guy, and I remember the steroid use with a guy in high school. I remember he was supposedly taking them. But I remember we had this guy, Jim Williams, was our strength and conditioning coach. He gave me a book on the benefits of steroid usage. And I know they have this HGH, a hormone growth, and some doctors use it as an aid for you. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not, like, legal. But I had one of my teammates who had a guy, and I'll never forget this. And I remember Marvin Powell and I said maybe when we get in our high 30s or 30s, we'll check it out or something. But I'll never forget, and some of my teammates tried to get me to use this stuff, and I remember they had this guy, and I remember I talked to the guy, and he said, yeah, I'll never forget, he said, you take this oral Anavar, and then you do this, I forgot the other the drug, but you inject it. I'm like, what do you mean you inject it? You give me a shot in the, like a butt. I'm like, that was enough for me. I don't like needles, man. And I'm like, that was enough for me. And then I'll never forget, the guy got busted for I don't know how many counts of illegal distribution of drugs. But I remember one of my friends on the team, he was a big one there. They were always telling me how for sex and all this other stuff. But he ended up breaking his neck, you know. And so a lot of guys, there was a lot of different side effects. And I think a lot of guys who were getting, like, these injuries, it could be a hamstring, and some of our guys that were being affected by it, with the injuries, I think that might have been a lot of part of it, you know? But back then, I didn't know enough about it, but I was just scared to give myself a shot in, you know, with a needle. And that was enough for me, and that's all it wrote for me, and I meant, I'm not doing that.
Well, one guy who got a lot of shots with needles, I would imagine, as far as painkillers go, was Richard Todd, because going into your Week 12 matchup against the Miami Dolphins, he had fractured ribs. He was in so much pain that he couldn't even call out signals during practice. There was question whether or not he was going to play. At this point, and I wanted to circle back on this and ask you about it in a second too, Todd had been so maligned by both the fans and the media, and it wasn't helped the fact that he basically assaulted a reporter, Steve Serby, earlier in this season. But in this game, Todd, who didn't practice, is able to go despite the fact that he's in so much pain. He can't really get a whole lot going early on, and Joe Fields, the center, even stepped on his foot and broke it. So now he's got fractured ribs and a broken foot, and he's hobbling all over the place, but he's able to hang in there. And the defense keeps things close, and the Dolphins are winning 15-9 with 3:10 to go. And then all of a sudden, Richard Todd goes to work. He drives you guys all the way down the field, and then with under 20 seconds to go, Todd hadn't been able to turn to his left this whole game because of how much pain there was in his ribs, but he finds the strength somehow just for a nanosecond to turn left and fake guys out, turns back to his right, fires a bullet in between two defenders to Jerome Barkham for the touchdown, and you guys end up winning this one 16-15. Todd is clearly in tremendous pain. The crowd at Shea Stadium is going absolutely bananas. And in fact, as this drive was unfolding, the crowd was getting louder and louder and louder and louder and louder to the point where you couldn't hear yourself think at the time. And you guys win it 16-15 to put you guys in the first place over the Dolphins. Gastineau is going crazy. He's running all over the field. It looks like his celebration lasted a good 10 to 15 minutes. Everyone's hugging each other, celebrating in the crowd. The players are going crazy. And Richard Todd is hobbling off of the field. And as he gets to the tunnel, the entire crowd gives him a standing ovation and chants his name. And he breaks down crying because he was a guy that had taken a lot of abuse, really, from the fans and from the media. And here he was, sucking up all these injuries, being the toughest guy in the field, and finding a way to get this done. And I've always felt, and I wanted to know what you think, because obviously I'm a fan, but you were there. I've always felt like this was the game where Richard Todd became the guy, the quarterback of the Jets, that he was finally accepted. I know, unfortunately for you, there was actually a bad thing here because you got hurt and you would miss a little bit of time. But to me, that was an incredible game and an incredible moment. Do you have any memories of it?
Well, I with me and as a player, I think, you know, you appreciate what's going on at the time and you understand, you know, the plight of what's going on, and fans can be fickle, and they don't know what has gone into that week and maybe what you've gone through. And like I said, with the ribs and having to get shot up and the things you go through, you know, they don't know those particular things going on, and that how much that can affect your play. They're looking just on the outcome, or you didn't do very well. And if they had an idea what a player has to go through and to get to that point and to try to be able to produce, whether it's producing win or lose, maybe they would have a different appreciation of what this guy has to go through, you know, and maybe they wouldn't be so critical of it. But the players know, you know. And in certain situations, we don't even know what a guy has to go through and what they're doing because they don't disclose the injuries. They want to keep it quiet. And obviously, you don't want somebody going after an injury that they know you have that's going to hit you in that area, that's going to make it work to put you out, that may affect the outcome of the game. But you have to give the credit when it's due, but it should be due all the time. And I appreciate it. I know it as a player. You know what players have to go through to get it done. It's very disheartening being hurt yourself where you can't contribute to help a person on the team that's even hurt. But I've always had respect for Richard Todd, and even to this day, sometimes I feel bad because I always make a big deal out of Kenny O'Brien, but I always felt like Kenny O'Brien got a raw deal, and I hate seeing that. And sometimes I have to apologize to Richard Todd that I always give him the credit. But I love playing with Richard Todd. I always had a great deal of respect for him. I always thought he tried to be maybe somebody else and not himself. He had to fill in for Joe Namath. But Richard Todd was a stud, and he had the size, he was good, he had this personality. I always liked that he had that accent, but just, you know, he was going to be there regardless if he could, you know, and he was going to perform. Whether he did well or he did not, he did probably more good than bad. And that game certainly was one of the turning points, I think, far as respect from the fans that he got. But it's always like that when you win. And that stadium was really rocking. And I remember only catching one pass during that last drive before Jerome Barkham to get a first down just to keep the drive going. And obviously you want to be the focal point of it. But, again, as a team, that's what it's really all about, working together. And if you look at those sequence of plays, it actually what taking place. But you definitely have to give the kudos to Richard Todd, not only coming back to make that play, but to endure what he had to go through to get to that point and what he had to struggle with just to get to the point and do what he did. And that's got to be a great credit and a good feeling. And then to get that feeling from the crowd after that. But you want that regardless, win or lose, from the crowd, because you want to understand and you know what this player went through. But nobody knows that. And I remember, and I'll relate it this way, I remember we were down on Joe Walton, and I was hurt. I remember, I think I retired maybe, seeing this documentary, and they were saying Joe must go, and the people were throwing things and spitting, and the fans could spit on you, and they could be cruel. When I was a rookie, I'm walking into that dugout, because you're right underneath where you're going for the baseball dugout, because we shared it with the Mets. Fans are yelling and screaming and spitting. They could be very cruel. And I remember them saying all these vile things to Joe Walton. And I remember his wife being in the stand. They did this documentary, and she's saying, "Joe, that's okay, Joe." And I literally cried when I saw this thing. And I'm thinking to myself, nobody should be able to endure this stuff. That is not even right. And I remember Richard Todd and how cruel the fan could be, but I can also remember when there would be signs, "Todd is God," and it's very fickle. But that's the world we live in. That's the game we play. They love you when you're up on top, and they love to kick you when you're down. The real fans are going to be there through thick and thin, and they're going to respect that. But what people don't really realize, what a person is enduring, what they're going through at that time. I mean, I remember one game where I had to get my knee drained. I'm getting shot with cortisone. I'm taking a Vicodin or whatever. They don't know all the things you're going through the night before or the day of the game. And maybe they would have a different appreciation knowing that you're even trying to make it through that struggle. Now, if Richard would have lost that game, nothing maybe would have been said, and it had been the bump, you know. But fortunately, on that outcome, he was the hero. But yet they still don't know what it took for him to make it through that game. And that's where you have a respect for those players that do this week in and week in. And Joe Glucko was another example of that, with injuries, Marty Lyons, they would get shot up. A lot of things you just don't know that goes on behind the scenes.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Do you have any memories, speaking of behind the scenes, of being there when Richard Todd lost his cool around Steve Serby and put his hands on him?
You know, Steve Serby is a good friend of mine, and I would see him, and I used to get mad with him, because I'll never forget, he wrote this derogatory article about Dwight Gooden being at the strip clubs, and he would be in the strip clubs. I was with him one time, and I'm like, how can you write this? That's like a double standard. But I was in that locker room, and I don't know what I was doing, and, you know, he's getting interviewed, and next thing we know, we hear this noise, and Steve Sir is knocked out, but like he wasn't really knocked out, but he was just, he hit him, and he was just in the locker room, you know. He obviously hit him and stuff, and it was kind of funny, but it wasn't funny. He shouldn't have done that. But that's another thing. You cannot lose your cool. And as good as I've had it in New York, every reporter has wrote, every reporter that I know, and I know a lot of, including Steve Serber, has wrote good articles and has wrote bad. And I remember even being on the on Channel 2, I forgot who the can't think of his name right now, but saying a bad thing, I dropped the ball or something and said something derogatory. But when you're good, you're like the hero. But I've been on the good end and the bad end. But you cannot lose your cool. And obviously, Richard lost his cool that day. But some of these reporters, they can push you to the end. But I would never, just like a wife or a girlfriend trying to say something to get you mad, I would never give any reporter or anyone the time that they made me angry or I'm getting pissed, you know. And not, I could hate you, but you will never know it, you know. And Richard obviously lost his cool that day. But I'm sure if you talk to Richard and Steve Serber, they would be cool with it. It's just something that happened.
Something else that happened, unfortunately, was you got hurt again after that Miami game. You missed a couple of games, but the team ended up going to the playoffs that year. You lost a bit of a heartbreaker to the Buffalo Bills, but this was the first year that you guys had a winning record and that you had a chance to play in the playoffs. And after having an injury-riddled year in 79 and in 80, you missed a couple games here, but you were mostly healthy and you bounced back to have 9 touchdown grabs. So how happy were you to mostly stay healthy and have a productive season? And even more so, how great did it feel to finally break out of things, have a winning record, and be able to go to the playoffs?
Well, that's always nice, but I'm always a I wouldn't say perfectionist, but you look for more, and obviously you don't like being hurt, and once you get to the playoffs, you want to be productive in the playoffs, and that was just a heartbreaking time for all of us, because what happens when you reach the playoffs, hey, anything can happen, but once you lose, it's over, and you're going home, and that's not a good feeling. You always want to, you know, be in the big dance. You want to go to the playoffs, and you want to have success once you get there. But that was always a heartbreaking thing. And with me, I never liked being injured, and I always looked at those kind of years as just being mediocre. You're just there. Anybody can do that and just be there. And that's what I always said, and that was always just frustrating because I always wanted to be a focal point and in any game that we had. And I hate to say this, too. It's almost being selfish. Like, you know, if we won and I was really successful and I had something, I was a focal point, I'm happy. And if we lost, you know, I'm freaking really unhappy. But if we could win and I wasn't a focal point, I'm frustrated still because I wouldn't be part of it. It's just a competition in me. But when I lost and I didn't do anything, I was even more distraught. But when we won, it's fun, but I would be frustrated if I didn't have something to do with that win. And that's kind of on the selfish side, but I just wanted to be almost, you can't be perfect, but you just wanted to be a big focal point of every game you played in. And unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that, and it can be very frustrating. And it was very frustrating for me because I was in a system where you know, I didn't have control over certain things where my abilities weren't used the way I thought I could be used.
Well, your abilities would be used to the max the following year in 1982, but it was kind of a weird year. In week 2 against the Patriots, Joe Klecko gets hurt, and he ends up being lost for the season. You end up hurting yourself. You hurt your back, so you're injured. And then the strike happens. So you're coming off 1981 where you went to the playoffs and optimism was up through the roof going into 82. Now there's injuries and the strike happens. So before we get to what was going on during the strike, do you feel like in retrospect, looking back now, in a way it was kind of a blessing for you guys because you were worn down, some of you were hurt?
Yep. I kind of look at that, but I didn't have the idea that we were going to have the success we had, because back then, too, there was a, when you're going on strike, everybody doesn't believe in it. There could be a split on the team, and that was another problem that I thought we had, and just being represented properly, getting the right information, and it just adds another dimension to a season where you want to play football, but you have other things that you have to worry about. And I was very fortunate in my latter part of my years that you get the information, become a union rep to try to help our team. So that's even another avenue, and it takes away from what you need to do. But in that situation, we were able to overcome a lot of different things, but it was just certainly a different season, but maybe it was a blessing in disguise that came about just to get us some help.
The season would be shortened to 9 games because of the strike, and we'll get back to that in a second. But first, I wanted to ask you what it was like during the strike. You said you were a union rep, I believe you and Marvin Powell were. But also, you got married during the strike, and there was some weird things going on because you had to be on call in case something would happen. But you had your wedding going on, and Marvin Powell kind of had to be the go-between, I guess. So take me through that. What was it like to get married during the strike, and what was the whole experience like?
It was actually... It was good because the fact that everybody was here, and I actually just got married in my own in backyard, and I don't know what it would have happened if it would have rained because I didn't make any plans, but it ended up being really wonderful, and it was a way for all of us to kind of get together, and it ended up working out. And I just remember being down on the Hempstead Turnpike with signs with, I forgot, 50% of the gross and unfair practices and just doing what we had to do. And I remember even the union when, because I never had a honeymoon, and I had to go to Washington games. We were putting together a strike game together, and which I didn't even play in, but I was, you know, because I was a union rep there, and I remember the union got me like a honeymoon suite there in Washington, but that wasn't really what I would call a honeymoon. But the bottom line of it, I would have never expected us to have the year that we had and have the success in, especially two of the games against the Raiders. I think it was Cincinnati, that the games that we had to have the success that we had, because in a strike year, when you some guys weren't there, you know, everybody could be, you know, in different parts of the country. You don't know how you're going to gel together. And we were having these little organized workouts amongst ourselves and everything else. But things just kind of came together. And like I said, it might have been a blessing in disguise for us to get some of us healthy back then. But how we got that really done, that is still a blur to me. And I was still surprised and shocked. And I remember when we made it to the playoffs and the games that we played, we were just in shock how everything worked out. But again, you look at what things could have been, and you just don't know when you're going to get there, the opportunities you have, and you have to take advantage of it. And unfortunately, when we really needed to do it, we didn't do it.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
There's part 4 of our in-depth discussion on the life and career of number 85, Wesley Walker. Some more incredible stuff there. Memories of that fantastic moment at Shea Stadium when the Jets defeated the Miami Dolphins when Richard Todd grid through those injuries. Wesley's firsthand account of the confrontation between Richard Todd and Steve Serby in the locker room. He talked frankly about the fact that he didn't take steroids, not necessarily because he didn't want to cheat, but because he was afraid of needles, which I thought was really fascinating. That's one thing that you don't really hear from athletes. They might say, oh, I didn't want to cheat, or I was afraid to get caught. No, Wesley just didn't want to deal with needles. Plus, you also heard him talk about the birth of the sack exchange and the fact that he believes his teammate Joe Klecko should go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So just fantastic stuff that Wesley continues to share on a weekly basis. And we will continue this series next week. And there's plenty more where that came from. Trust me. As we bring Big John back in, he was testing some shoes that Nike sent him to make sure that they fixed what was wrong so another athlete doesn't get hurt like Zion Williamson. They sent a bunch of pairs to John for him to try and figure out what was going on. So he had a deadline to meet to finish wearing those shoes and send the report in. John, what did you find wearing these shoes?
Scotty, I thought the shoes were applied excellence. I ran some errands in them. I did some laundry. Walked to my local pizza place to only bring home the pizza to cook it myself. I sat on the couch and watched some TV. So I think the shoes are top notch.
John, that all sounds good, and I'm really glad you didn't get hurt or anything. But I fail to see exactly how that's a sufficient test, because guys like Zion Williamson are going to be doing high-impact athletic events and training. How exactly does walking for pizza or sitting on the couch do anything for you as far as figuring out if these sneakers are going to be able to withstand the type of punishment that they're going to get from players like Zion Williamson using them in situations like that?
I mean, Scotty, the pizza place is a 2-mile walk round trip.
Sure, but walking to the pizza place is not the same as running up and down a court and smashing your body into other giant players. Is there something I'm missing here?
Scotty, I think I failed them again.
But it's no backsies on the sneakers, right?
I think I'll edit my report that I played basketball in them. They'll never know I was just playing a video game on my couch.
20 free pairs of Nikes. John, you're going to send me a couple pairs, right?
Scotty, if we're the same size, you got it.
Pretty sure we're not. That's why they call you Big John, because you're not the same size as really anybody. So enjoy those shoes, John. I'm sure that you won't have to buy any sneakers for a couple of years now. So you can save that money and use it on some of the great shirts that we have available at our store, theloyalist.com/turnonthejets. Of course, that includes the Play Like a Jet shirt, as I was mentioning before. A ton of others, too, you might want to represent as the Jets get ready for the biggest part of the year for them, traditionally, free agency and the NFL draft, or at least over the last couple of years, it's been the biggest part of the year for the New York Jets. But that's why on this show, we look back at all the best memories in New York Jets history, including the 13-year career of one of the best players they ever had, Wesley Walker. And we are going to get into part 5 of that discussion next week. Aren't you pumped up for that, Bart Scott?
Can't wait!
Bart, how come they don't send you to Florida with Mike Francesa? I feel like they should. You've earned it with all your great football coverage. Plus, if they send you to Florida, maybe they could accidentally forget to send you microphones, and you just get a free vacation out of it, and nobody here has to actually listen to you try to talk intelligently about baseball, because we know you're not really capable of it. Sorry, Bart. Love you, but you're not a baseball guy. Before we go, just wanted to remind you about the great job that our producer, Alan Schechter, is doing on the show. Again, the only reason that this series with Wesley Walker is possible is because Alan was able to secure Wesley as a guest and also was a big part of putting together the background research for the interview. He does a fantastic job running EmpireWritesBack.com, involving all things New York sports, which is great for me. It's great for you, since I'm sure if you're listening to this, there's a good chance that you're a big New York sports fan. But it's especially great for people like John, because John, you're out of market, and this is your way of keeping current with everything that's going on in the New York sports scene, right?
Scotty, that's right. Big fan of the website. And Alan, I think I'll send you an autographed pair of one of these shoes. Hopefully I don't send it to Adam Schefter's house again by accident.
Alan, you might want to wear about 12 pairs of socks if you're going to fit your foot into Big John's size shoes. It's not an easy task, I promise you that. That's going to do it for us this week. My name is Scott Mason. My tag team partner is Big John Spiropoulos. And John, I believe you know there's only one way that we can end this show.
Scotty, pleasure as always. Like Spike Lee said in that Air Jordan commercial all those years ago, it's got to be the shoes. Break it down.
One, two, three.
And the home of the Jets.